is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. Last month, a Saudi Air Force lieutenant training at a U.S. naval base in Pensacola, Florida, stood up in his classroom and opened fire. He killed three American airmen and wounded eight others. The U.S. government quickly branded that attack an act of terrorism. An investigation was underway. But then Attorney General William Barr went to a microphone last week and said one gigantic U.S. company was standing in the way.
We have asked Apple for their help in unlocking the shooter's phones. So far, Apple has not given any substantive assistance. This situation perfectly illustrates why it is critical that the public be able to get access to digital evidence once it has obtained a court order based on probable cause. We call on Apple and other technology companies to help us find a solution so that we can better protect the lives of American people and prevent future attacks.
And so here is the question once again. Should the government force Apple and other tech companies to decrypt these devices? And what exactly is it that Apple's refusing to do? Joining me here in the studio to help us understand what's at stake here is Professor Jennifer Daskal. She's a professor and the faculty director at the Tech Law Security Program at American University's Washington College of Law. Professor, I'm glad you're here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Full disclosure, by the way, American University owns the license for WAMU, the public radio station that produces 1A. Joining us from Los Angeles is Kara Swisher. She's the editor-at-large for Recode, a website that covers tech. She's also an opinion contributor to the New York Times, where she covers technology. Kara Swisher, it's great to have you.
Thanks very much.
And at NPR in New York City is Julian Sanchez, senior fellow at the Cato Institute. He studies technology, privacy, and security with a focus on national security and intelligence surveillance. The Cato Institute is a libertarian think tank with a focus on American policy. You can read Julian just last week in the op-ed pages of the New York Times. Julian, welcome to 1A.
Thanks, Todd. Good to be here.
I, like millions of Americans, am an iPhone user. I take this personally. Julian, Apple and the DOJ appear to be in yet another dispute over iPhone encryption. Can you tell us what the current issue really is?
Well, I mean, I think before we ask whether Apple should comply with this request, we ought to ask whether they can comply with this request. As far as I know, the answer is no. They're not asking in this case for a specific concrete thing that Apple can do. They're saying, well, we just want your help in breaking into these phones. But, of course, Apple itself has increasingly attempted to ensure that they don't have that capability.
Now, Kara, what about San Bernardino? Because as we hear about Bill Barr's reaction to Pensacola, this goes back to the terror attack in San Bernardino, of course. Is this case fundamentally different, or is this just another ask in kind from the Justice Department, as Julian suggested?
Well, it's 10%, you know, it's 100% dumber, because at least in that case, they were asking for a specific thing, which is this thing that Apple dubbed government OS. So in this case, they're asking for something nonspecific of something that Apple can't do, which is correct, what Justin was saying. And they're pretending that Apple can do it. So it's both, I don't know, disingenuous and not very smart. And so it's not really clear what Bill Barr's game is here. I think it's just to stoke fear, to put pressure on them, to take advantage of the fact the public doesn't quite understand. It's not just, you know, give us the passcode. Again, what they want to do, I think what they want to do is have that, you know, ability for Apple to redesign its system, essentially, so that all phones will be vulnerable. You know, give them a backdoor, it's called a backdoor key or a backdoor of some sort, so that the government would be able to enter anybody's iPhone if they need to, presumably with a warrant. But giving, you know, a government this capability is a massive problem for privacy, and that's why Apple is pushing back so strongly. It can't help it any more than any other technical person who knows how to break into these phones, which are quite they're quite old, actually. It's an iPhone 5 and an iPhone 7, I think. So it's easier to break into by lots and lots of security consultants.
Professor Daskal, if it's true that the government is asking iPhone to do something that it knows iPhone actually can't do, then what's the game here?
So I think this is a game that's similar to the game that took place with respect to the San Bernardino shooting. So after the big kerfuffle between Apple and the FBI, it turned out that In that case, it turned out that the FBI was able, with the help of what's been reported to be Cellebrite, able to access that phone via a vulnerability. And there was a subsequent IG report that came out that basically made clear that up until the point that there was the very public showdown between Apple and FBI in that case, the FBI hadn't really engaged the part of the FBI that would be able to think through the possibility of using this kind of vulnerability to provide access in another way. And there was a lot of suggestion that this was done in order to force a public debate about something that DOJ has wanted for a very long time, which is legislation that would require tech companies to design their systems in a way that would ensure that they could comply with these types of requests. And it seems like this very well may be a similar kind of move to raise the public debate and get that dialogue going again.
Interesting. So really, when it comes down to it, that view says a PR move, a sophisticated PR move to push Congress to where Bill Barr and the Justice Department want them to go on this technology.
Yes, that's very possible. And last time around, it didn't work. There was a little bit of legislation that had been kind of put out there. It was widely critiqued. And I think there's all kinds of reasons to be concerned about legislation along that front, really for a range of security reasons, in addition to a whole host of other reasons as well.
We got this call from Brooke in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, who shared thoughts on whether Apple should comply with the DOJ's request here, such as it is.
I am opposed to their doing it unless law enforcement has a search warrant, which has to be granted by a judge and has to specify what it is they're looking for. We are protected by our Constitution from unreasonable search and seizures, and I'm glad to know that Apple is demanding that law enforcement follow the Constitution.
Eric tweeted, Apple has no obligation to any government or law enforcement agency. If the government wants to get into an iPhone, they need to hire better hackers. And David says, people have a false sense of morality when privacy is seen as a greater need than safety. When we're unsafe or dead, your privacy means nothing. Julian Sanchez, is a warrant actually at stake here? Is that the issue in the Pensacola case and what Bill Barr is asking for?
No, I mean, both cases, there is a warrant. There has actually been, as far as I know, no legal order to Apple apart from subpoenas for the data they had. So there's two separate questions. One is data in their possession about the user of these phones. For example, things like iCloud backups. People often back up their phones remotely to Apple servers. So they were subpoenaed for that data and turned it over. But, you know, a search warrant doesn't kind of require, it may enable you to search a house, but it doesn't enable you to go recruit all the neighbors and force them to help you search. The search warrant means they are legally authorized to attempt to get into the phone. But even when you have a lawful search warrant, that doesn't automatically mean you can conscript anyone else who has relevant expertise to assist you in that search. That's just sort of never been the case. In the San Bernardino instance, they attempted to use, in a quite novel way, a very old piece of legislation called the All Writs Act that essentially lets a court issue secondary orders to enforce other orders. And the idea was the All Writs Act was going to order Apple to comply, to help assist with the execution of the search warrant. In this case, there is a search warrant, but again, to date, as far as I know, there hasn't been a formal legal order to Apple. I think maybe in part because, unlike the San Bernardino case, they don't really have a concrete request that Apple must do X. They're sort of saying, we wish we could get into this phone, and we wish Apple had a way to make that happen, whether they do or not.
Well, Apple bases its pitch to you on privacy and security, saying they will never give you over to the U.S. government. Is that legit or a marketing ploy? Julian Sanchez, Kara Swisher, Professor Daskal of American University are here. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp, the online counseling service dedicated to connecting you with a licensed counselor to help you overcome whatever stands in the way of your happiness. Fill out a questionnaire and get matched with a professional tailored to your needs. And if you aren't satisfied with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time, free of charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/1A to get 10% off your first month. Get the help you deserve with BetterHelp.
I'm Peter Sagal. Sure, you're enjoying this NPR podcast filled with important and useful information, but is it the most important and useful information? Like this.
The museum actually went and made a synthetic version of dinosaur breath.
It's Axe body spray, isn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
Wait, don't tell me, from NPR. Listen now and share with your friends.
Welcome back to 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. We're talking about the latest confrontation between Apple and the Department of Justice. Vernon says Apple providing the DOJ a way to crack encryption on the iPhone is the slippery slope. The government can't be trusted to do the right thing. And Kathy emails this: if someone commits a capital crime or a terrorist act, I feel they have forfeited their right to digital privacy. First Amendment or not, the phones need to be investigated. And that makes me think, Kathy, it's not just the First Amendment that's at stake. It's also the Fourth Amendment, your right to be protected against unreasonable search and seizure. And that's what I want to ask you about, Professor Daskal. Is there a difference in what the government wants from Apple, let's say, in a national security case, terrorism, versus what we think of as regular old crime?
So the thing that they want is the same. They want, in these particular investigations, they want access to the phone. The standard is the same. The Fourth Amendment standard is the same whether you're talking about ordinary crime or national security investigations. And here, just to be clear, the issue is not that there's lack of compliance with the Fourth Amendment. There's been a warrant based on probable cause. The question is, can Apple be forced to basically create, even if it could in the situation, to design its systems in a way that would ensure that the government can get access in situations in which it says it's needed?
And Kara Swisher, when I read what you all write about this issue, it makes me think back to other instances. This is not the first time. I mean, the government now wants Apple to engineer a way into iPhones that does not currently exist. Well, didn't the telecoms do that exact thing when the NSA wired up America's internet for metadata surveillance? Didn't the phone companies, as Professor Daskal just described, do the same thing to enable wiretapping, which basically goes back, I think, to the invention of telephones? Hasn't this been done before?
It's not the same thing. This is encryption. They can't do it. The system of protecting these phones is made so you cannot break it, unless, you know, someday we'll have quantum computing that presumably can do so. But the whole point is they've designed a system you can't break, and therefore the only way to design it is to create a porous system that the government would be able to get into. And that's, it's a very different thing than going through, there was a quote by the Justice Department spokeswoman, which was even more disingenuous, that it's a front door issue. It's not a front door issue. It's a systemic issue around iPhones or whatever phones. In this case, it's iPhones. But they have to change it fundamentally so that it leaves all phones vulnerable. And that's what they don't want to say. So they'd like to make people think that Apple is somehow doing that they could do it if they wanted to, and that they're creating just an atmosphere of untruth around what they're asking for. Now, if you want to have a substantive debate about it and say, we want to design it so we can get into phones, which means we'll get into all your phones, that's fine. But they don't want to do that. They want to create fear. They want to sort of obfuscate what they're really asking for or not ask for it at all in order to put pressure on Apple to do something it actually can't do.
Now, Kara, that's really important what you just said. It's a very different thing to frame a debate, go to the American people and say, hey, look, we're the government. We want to make sure that we can have access to all these devices in your pockets when we get a warrant, when we deem it necessary and the courts agree and all that stuff. It's a different thing to point to a horrific act of terrorism, airmen dead on a U.S. military base, a horrible crime, and say, we could prevent these things but for what Apple's doing.
Prevent them? Let me just explain what I wrote in my column in the New York Times. Is it, you know, they said it was a failure of something in order not to be able to get into this phone. It was a failure not to vet this cadet correctly, not to watch his social media post while he was serving in Florida. No, why was the government not doing that, which was available to them, because these were social media posts? So, I mean, there's a failure everywhere along. It's a failure not to have pushed Saudi Arabia more to know more about this cadet. I mean, again, anywhere along the line, there were failures of which you could have gotten access to. And Apple has given them information. They gave them information from the cloud, and they do comply with court requests. I think the issue is around the actual thing they want, which is what they're not saying. And they've gotten everything else that they've asked for that's available via a court order. And that's really the that's really what's frightening here is I just can't tell whether Attorney General Barr doesn't know what he's talking about or he's just willfully lying to the American public.
We got this email from Derek. Actually, let me skip Derek and go to Chris. It's more relevant to the moment that we're at right now. One of the government's primary duties is to protect its citizens. Investigating a criminal's phone is equivalent to seizing and searching a computer or a hard copy file. In that case, I fully support the DOJ's and their argument in this case. And we got this voicemail from Linda in Georgia.
Apple should accommodate law enforcement, whether you're convicted or not, even if you're suspected. I'm tired of hearing that it's for your privacy. If you're a law-abiding citizen, you don't give a crap if they listen to your stuff. I don't. I've got absolutely nothing to hide. So, encrypt it. Help out the good guys for a change instead of always looking out for the bad guys.
Julian Sanchez, do your ears go up when you hear Americans say, if you're not doing anything wrong, you have nothing to hide? How does it play into this case?
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, A, everyone has something to hide. And B, you know, I think this is an illustration of why they've chosen this sort of dishonest way to frame this. If you frame the question as, you know, should Apple cooperate with this request as though Apple has some secret key and they're just willfully refusing to hand it over, then maybe that sounds unreasonable. Why don't you give access to this set of data? If you frame it as, should everyone's encryption be designed differently, not so they can get data in this case, but for future purposes, that maybe gives you a different answer. And, you know, even if you trust the American government implicitly and think, gosh, you know, the government never improperly surveils anyone or uses their power inappropriately, systemically weakening encryption, which is what you would need to do to comply. Now, again, not in this case. That's sort of that horse has left the barn. But for future cases, if you want them to be able to comply and unlock phones in the future, you would need to design all phones to be weaker, to be breakable. And that doesn't just expose you to potential search by our government. Once you build this capability for the U.S. government, it's just completely unrealistic to imagine you will not immediately have China and Russia and every other repressive regime that can exert pressure on Apple saying, well, if you give them the key, we want the key also. And, you know, in terms of privacy versus security, I think privacy very much is security. We have, you know, critical credentials that secure cyber systems that are stored on these phones. We have dissidents around the world whose lives quite literally would be at risk if the government could easily access the data on their devices. So this dichotomy between privacy and security is, I think, very much a false one.
Derek emailed to say, I bought my first iPhone specifically because of their public standoff with the FBI. I chose to support a company that will protect my data by any means necessary, and I appreciate that they're doing all they can. Kara Swisher, part of Apple's appeal for many people is encryption security. Is Apple's current stance here about protecting privacy and protecting that sales proposition to us, the customers, the buying public? We will never, ever give up your secrets. Do you think it's about that, or is it about their bottom line?
They are not saying we will never, ever give up your secrets. They did give the DOJ a ton of information. So that's not quite the proposition. But they do push privacy, that they're going to keep these are secure, especially in a world of you know, increased hacking and ability to get into these systems. Their idea is we have encryption that will protect you. They're not going to not help the government in critical incidents of criminality if they can do so and the stuff they can be available. And as to the woman's call before, I was just thinking about it as I was listening. Saying you don't have secrets, the government doesn't want to just get in your front door in this way. Imagine if she said she doesn't have secrets, would you like a 24-hour camera in your house with the government looking at it at any time they wanted, that they could get a court order, which is relatively easy to get in lots of ways. And so that's really the difference. It's a constant surveillance state, which exists in China and other autocratic regimes. And if you wanted a surveillance state, that's where you're headed with this. And in Apple's case, it is absolutely great for their marketing. We're more private. You're not going to get hacked, which is another, it's a whole nother area is hacking in terms of economic hacking and things like that, which this will be a boon to people who steal credit card numbers and everything else. But it's part of Apple's marketing. It's a good marketing, right? It's a good thing to offer. It's a good feature of Apple phones is that you feel safer with them.
Julian, so much of the legislating around this type of surveillance and these types of authorities happens behind closed doors, happens in classified settings when it gets to Congress. Look at the Patriot Act. Look at annual intelligence authorization, which is the people's business that maybe by necessity, I don't know, happens behind closed doors. What does it mean that the political maneuvering on this issue has spilled into the public? Why isn't Bill Barr just going before, you know, Adam Schiff and Devin Nunes and the august members of Congress and arguing for this authority and fight it out with Apple? Why is he going public like this and trying to pressure them publicly in ways that at least everybody on this show find really disingenuous?
Yeah, I mean, I think because this is something they've been pushing for quite a long time. I mean, this is not something that started with San Bernardino. This is something DOJ has wanted since really the early 90s. And that's a fight they lost essentially in the late 90s and early 2000s, and sort of lost again around San Bernardino. And so, you know, I think they've decided, you know, in part because technology companies, security people are all, I think, fairly strongly opposed to that kind of mandate, that kind of built-in vulnerability for what they call lawful access, that they feel like the way to move the needle on this after not having been successful in the past is to create public outrage, again, in part by trying to fool people into believe this is a question about Apple refusing to hand over some key they've got, refusing to help in a particular case, which they can't do, rather than ultimately about getting Apple to redesign their systems.
Professor, the status quo does have a way of creeping, doesn't it? It's not supposed to, by definition, but it does.
The status quo creeps, and technology has also shifted, so I think we have to acknowledge that as well. But I, you know, the question about why is this being fought out in the public, that's exactly where it should be fought out. And so that is a good thing. If DOJ wants this authority, there ought to be a public debate and dialogue about that question.
Well, then let me give the Attorney General credit, whether he's being disingenuous or not in his plea for Apple to play along. He did go to a microphone and do it, and that means we can discuss it here on this show on 1A, and he's given us a forum to do it, so maybe that's a good thing. Well, Apple's final decision will impact people, not just in the United States. Julian mentioned it, overseas as well. What would it mean on the international stage if an American company builds back doors to its products? A lot. We're going to have a lot more from our guests and from you in just a moment. Stick with us. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor LegalZoom. It's easy to make the same old New Year's resolutions that won't stick, so change it up this year. Use LegalZoom to do something impactful in your life. For over 19 years, LegalZoom has helped more than 4 million people, providing resources for resolving your personal and business legal needs. LegalZoom isn't a law firm, so you can count on their network of independent attorneys for advice. More information is available at LegalZoom.com/NPR.
It seems like you really like podcasts, but have you ever thought about making one?
Okay, so we have a guide for you, especially if you're a kid in school and want to make a podcast of your own. Check out the new podcast from NPR's Student Podcast Challenge.
Listen and share with your friends.
I'm Todd Zwillick. It's 1A. Back to our conversation now on Apple and the Department of Justice's latest demands that they unlock encrypted iPhones with Kara Swisher of Recode, Julian Sanchez of the Cato Institute, and Professor Jennifer Daskal of American University's Washington College of Law. Look, we started this conversation talking about Bill Barr and Apple, but none of these issues are between Washington and Silicon Valley. They're not just inside the borders of the United States. They spread worldwide. All data spreads worldwide. We don't look any further than Russian hacking of our election to know that all of these issues are worldwide. And a lot of people are reaching out to us right now and asking about Huawei, giant Chinese company that the United States has called on the carpet for engineering devices that are surveillable, that give an advantage to the Chinese government. Blitzfrost973 tweets, didn't the U.S. accuse China of the same thing that they want Apple to do in regards to Huawei? And Dean wants to know the same thing. So DOJ wants American companies to do exactly what they've accused China of doing, Professor?
Right. So this gets into a whole host of questions about the international implications of some of these requests. I want to emphasize this important distinction between data in motion and data at rest. And one of the things that DOJ has been pushing, not in this particular dispute, but more broadly, is for some sort of decryption mandate that would cover both. The points that Julian made about the particular risks with respect to data in motion are quite important to consider.
I got you. Now, what about some people perceive as a fundamental hypocrisy here, that the United States, even the Department of Justice itself, has perhaps rightly gone at Huawei for their pro-state, pro-surveillance device-building practices, and now they want to turn around and ask companies under their jurisdiction to do exactly the same thing?
So to just put on the department's hat for one moment,
sure.
What the department would say in this situation is that what they're doing is different, that they would demand access, presumably pursuant to a warrant and based on standards and some sort of court oversight.
But we've already learned it's about how you build the device, not about the warrant, right?
It's about how you build the device so that when you get the warrant, you can get access to that data. And so that's a key difference between what at least has been that the accusations are with respect to some of the surveillance systems that are being designed elsewhere. But that's exactly right. And one of the considerations is the economic costs of this. So Apple is selling its phones in part because of the fact that they are secure. And if the United States required them to redesign its phones in ways that everyone around the world knew were less secure, that affects the economic competitiveness, not just of Apple, but of all of U.S.-based companies that are designing these systems.
Kara Swisher, what do you think about that fundamental criticism, that accusation of hypocrisy on part of the U.S. government when it comes to companies like Huawei and what they want American companies to do?
It's completely on target. We're not China, despite the fact that you have to go to a court to get these things. The idea of building a surveillance phone is really problematic, and that's exactly what we're worried about. With Huawei and others, and including the fact that these phones are also built in China. You know, if you want to see where it's going, you look at what's going on in China in terms of the surveillance economy they're building there among their citizens. And if our government, you know, it doesn't matter that they don't abuse it or they use the court system, is that they can abuse it. And abuses happen all the time. Look at all the revelations with Edward Snowden. Whatever you think of what Edward Snowden did, they were doing all kinds of things they weren't supposed to do, the government was. And governments by nature often overreach when they can. And what you don't want to do is give them the ability to do so. And I get the problems, by the way, of it's incredibly frustrating to the government if they can't just get into something that they want to get into. But this is a fundamentally very different thing than walking through a front door. It's very different than being able to search and seizure. And they do have other methods. One, to get in these phones in particular. They can hack these phones. And two, they have other methods of intelligence in order to have figured out what's going on here. And, you know, our democracy does not come down to getting into one phone. It is about protecting the rights of all our citizens not to be unlawfully surveilled, essentially. And it's a big thorny question, and it should be a public debate. The issue I have is that the terms they're setting for the public to debate are disingenuous. And so we should have a big discussion about what we want. I'm guessing the government will not get what it wants if we had an actual, honest public debate about this. But let's do it. Let's discuss what kind of country we want. And then, great, then we may be able to pass those laws.
I don't know. Kara, you might be suggesting that Bill Barr has made a fundamental miscalculation here. He could have, I suppose, tried to debate this in private or in classified setting with the Gang of Eight or members of the Intelligence Committee, but he has opted to have this in public.
He has had that debate. This is just for the for the circus.
Yeah.
And by the way, let's have the debate. Great. Let's have an honest debate about what's going on here, and really give people the choices that they should have.
Julian, go ahead.
I can say certainly it's superior to what NSA was doing for a long time, which is after having in the late 90s and early noughts lost that debate about policy, they then essentially secretly found ways to compromise widely used encryption protocols. So I suppose it's an improvement that they're not just ignoring that they lost the political debate and doing what they want anyway. But they've done this in a way that I think fundamentally mischaracterizes it. They want us to ask, should the government be able to conduct a search when they get a warrant? And of course they should. But they're not guaranteed success. The debate they don't want to have, because it's sort of scary when you frame it this way, though it's accurate, is not should the government be able to search with a warrant, but should the world be designed such that when the government searches, they are guaranteed to find what they're looking for? Mm. I think the answer is no. We should not guarantee them a world that is searchable, even if we give them the power to search in particular circumstances.
Kara, knowing what you know about the way departments of justice operate and lawmakers operate and companies like Apple operate, what do you expect next? What do you want us to be looking out for as this debate continues? I mean, look, we established at the top of the show that Bill Barr's moves were disingenuous here. It's not about San Bernardino. It's not about Pensacola. It's about a bigger issue. You might not have known that if somebody smart hadn't explained it to you. I didn't know that. So what do you want us to be looking out for as we try to be smart people during this debate about our privacy?
I think they're going to hack this phone. They'll be able to hack these phones, and they'll be able to get the information they need off of them. And they're totally hackable, these particular phones, in fact. What I think the issue is, I'm coming back to that woman's call. Do you want a camera in your house 24 hours a day that's recording all the time? Now, they're not going to look for it unless they find out later you're a criminal, and then they'll go back and look at your thing. And so that's the kind of thing that has to happen with all these things, is as we put more of these devices into our homes, whether it's a Nest, whether it's, Echo, whatever it is, cameras everywhere, who do we trust and who has the right to our trust in terms of our safety and our security? And that's, I think that's really where it has to go, especially as these systems become more embedded into our lives. And then secondly, we should watch out for what's going to happen with quantum computing, because it could just blow the whole system up, because these quantum computing systems, I'm not an expert in this area at all, but they can break encryption. And then what is a world without encryption or without the ability to have encryption? That's a very dangerous world, especially for our military and everywhere else. And if you know, one thing that's interesting is Ash Carter, who used to be the defense secretary, was not with James Comey when this happened last time. It's kind of ironic that it's James Comey and Bill Barr together on this issue. But a lot of people who know how important encryption is to our national security are worried about this too.
Professor Daskal, take just a couple of seconds. What do you want us to think about as we think about this debate?
So I think we need to acknowledge that law enforcement has legitimate concerns about getting access to evidence and information in a digital world in which there is more and more default encryption. But I think we also need to ask whether and what are the costs of the kinds of decryption mandates that the department wants to pursue, and think through quite hard the security consequences, the alternative means of getting that information, the freedom of expression and privacy consequences, and our economic consequences as well of some of the things that the department is currently pursuing.
These debates are complicated. They are technical and over the head of this radio host, and I think over the heads of many of us in the public. It is so valuable and important to have these conversations where we can be apprised of what we're really supposed to pay attention to. It's hard to follow the ball when the ball is hidden. Hey, all three of you, thank you for holding up the adamantium ball and letting us know exactly what's important in this debate. I really appreciate it. Professor Jennifer Daskal, professor and faculty director at Tech Law and Security Program at American University's Washington College of Law. Kara Swisher, editor-at-large for Recode, opinion contributor where she covers tech for the New York Times. And to you, Julian Sanchez, senior fellow at the Cato Institute, studying technology and privacy and security. All three of you, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This conversation was produced by Morgan Givens and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about the team, visit the1a.org. And by the way, Morgan Givens has a great storytelling podcast. It's called Flyest Fables. And watch out for Morgan next week on Morning Edition with Noel King, because Flyest Fables will be on the air. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.